www.mpb.org to download the recordings in MP3 format. We ask that if you need to eat during the meeting, please eat quietly in the back of the room. Please take a moment to silence or turn off your cell phones. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation and, for those who wish to join us, in saying the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Amen. Alone this evening, but for the record, are there any other compulsive eaters at this meeting other than myself? The We Care folder will be circulating in the room for the duration of the meeting. The first time for you to list your name, telephone number, and email, and the rest for you to take names and phone numbers to call during the week. If you are joining us remotely, please use the meeting's chat function as a virtual We Care book and enter your first name, phone number, times available for phone calls, and whether or not you are currently a sponsor in the How format. We will then add you to the We Care book that is being circulated in the room. A copy of this list can be sent to you after the meeting via text or email. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and mutual support, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. Would someone please read What is How?
Hi, I'm Jane, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jane. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. What is How? How is a movement within Overeaters Anonymous whose basic principle is that abstinence is the only means to freedom from compulsive overeating and the beginning of a spiritual life. Where and why did How begin? How began in Phoenix in 1981 as a means of reviving a group called OA Victorious. Its meeting format is taken from Roseanne's book, I Put My Hand in Yours, and centers around the concept of service. Many of the questions used in How sponsoring stem from OA Plus and Westminster groups. The outline of service came from the OA Suffolk County, New York Sponsors Guide.
Thanks, Jane.
Thanks.
Would someone please read the only requirement?
Good evening. My name is Mary G.
Hi, Mary. Welcome.
Overeaters Anonymous respects the autonomy of each OA group. We do suggest, however, that any group that has requirements in addition to the suggested 12 steps and 12 traditions inform its members that these requirements are what that particular group has found effective in working the program and do not represent OA as a whole. The members of this group have found the OA How or the How concept to be effective in working the OA program. The opinions expressed here tonight by those who share are their own and not necessarily those of OA. The Board of Trustees states, we understand the third tradition to mean that individual ways of working one's program should not exclude any compulsive overeater from attendance and participation at OA meetings anywhere, anytime. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Anyone who says he or she is a member is a member. We of Overeaters Anonymous welcome all members with open arms. Pass.
Thank you, Mary. Would someone please read the How concept?
How Hello, my name is Erin.
Hi, Erin. Welcome.
The Overeaters Anonymous HOW meetings have been formed to offer the compulsive overeater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach. HOW groups are formed in the belief that our disease is absolute and that only absolute acceptance of the OA program will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, we accept the 9 tools of the program and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as necessary for our recovery. Our meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the how of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideas offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the how ideals will help us to progress in our recovery, our program of recovery, on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. The evening meeting also firmly understands that after a recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first 3 steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive overeating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifested in this room. Amen.
Thank you, Erin. Would someone please read reflections for the newcomer?
Hi, everybody. Can you see me okay? I'm having a little trouble sitting tonight, so. My name is Pamela, and I am a compulsive overeater and food addict, and I am a 2-hour house sponsor.
Reflections. Hi, Pamela. Welcome.
You are. Thank you. Welcome to OA HOW. We are all so glad that you have decided to become a part of our fellowship. You know that the HOW concept is a discipline program. We believe that the discipline of weighing and measuring, of telephoning your sponsor at a particular time, of attending meetings and making phone calls, all lead to a life on the universal discipline, which is accord rather than discord, even with many things going on around us. Therefore, if there is a breakdown in any of these areas, the concept is threatened as is the individual's absence. We have found that the discipline must remain as constant for the beginner as for the sponsor. If the newcomer shies away from the life's responsibility, the sponsor may have the newcomer's time slot to someone more committed to recovery. This is not a personal affront, but a matter of necessity. So many who think they should recover, in fact, are not ready. If the newcomer should show lack of commitment, the sponsor may often offer the newcomer assistance in finding a new sponsor. The rationale here is, if the newcomer insists on picking up the food before the phone, then there is a breakdown in the level of communication between the sponsor and the newcomer. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Doctor's opinion, big book page, Roman numeral 26, paragraph 2. If a sponsor slips, get a new one. The pitfalls of self-deception cannot be overstressed if you are to recover. Therefore, a sponsor, in all honesty, must release all sponsees to continue his own recovery. A sponsor cannot give what he does not experience. Finally, You must believe that we need each other. All problems that arise can be worked on via the phone or person-to-person contact. Only positive, upbeat recovery belongs at our meeting. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is most powerful restorative. The family afterwards, Big Book, page 133, paragraph 2. Good luck. Everyone in the fellowship is praying for you. Find the release from the obsession so many of us have. God bless. And no matter what, keep coming back. We'll always be here for you. Thank you for allowing me to do service.
Thanks, Pamela. Would someone please read an excerpt from step 2 of the OA 12 and 12?
Hi, this is Lisa J., a gratefully recovering compulsive overeater in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Excerpt from step 2 of the 12 and 12 of OA. When we look with complete honesty at our lives, we see that where eating is concerned, we have acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Under the compulsion to overeat, many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. We have driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We have eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, or even dangerously spoiled. We have eaten food off of other people's plates, off the floor, off the ground. We have dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. We have frequently lied about what we have eaten, lied to others because we didn't want to face the truth ourselves. We have stolen food from our friends, family, and employers, as well as from the grocery store. We have also stolen money to buy food. We have eaten beyond the point of being full, beyond the point of being sick of eating. We have continued to overeat, knowing all the while we were disfiguring and maiming our bodies. We have isolated ourselves to eat, damaging our relationships and denying ourselves a full social life. For the sake of our compulsive eating, we have turned ourselves into objects of ridicule and we have destroyed our health. Then, horrified by what we were doing to ourselves with food, we became obsessed with diets. We spent hundreds of dollars on weight loss schemes. We bought all sorts of appetite control drugs. We had major surgery on our digestive systems. We had our ears stapled or our jaws wired shut. All of this we did willingly, hoping we could someday have our cake and eat it too. Some of us went from doctor to doctor looking for a cure. The doctors gave us diets, but we had no better success with those than with the other diets we'd been on. The doctors gave us shots and pills. Those worked for a while, but we inevitably lost control and overate again, putting back on the weight we had worked so hard to lose. Many of us tried fasting with and without a doctor's supervision. Usually, we lost weight, but as soon as we started eating again, the compulsive eating behavior returned, along with the weight. Some of us learned to purge ourselves with vomiting, laxatives, or excessive exercise. We'd stuff food in our mouths until we were in physical pain, then we'd get rid of it. We damaged our digestive systems and our teeth while we starved our bodies of nutrients needed to live. Those of us who were overweight got plenty of advice from others about how to get to our ideal size, but nothing permanently solved our problem. We found that no matter what we did to ease our turmoil, our compulsive eating eventually returned. Over the long haul, our weight went up and our self-esteem went down. After a while, we became battle-weary and discouraged. Still, we could never accept our powerlessness. The prospect of being obese, sick, and out of control for the rest of our lives led some of us to conclude that life was simply not worth living. Many of us thought about suicide. Some of us tried it. Most of us, however, never reached suicidal desperation. Instead, we took comfort in a feeling that everything was all right as long as we got enough to eat. The only trouble was that as our compulsive eating progressed, it became harder for us to get enough. Instead of bringing comfort, the overeating backfired. The more we ate, the more we suffered, yet we continued to overeat. Our true insanity could be seen in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food long after it began to cause us misery. Thanks. This is Lisa, compulsive overeater in Portland, Oregon, and I pass.
Thanks, Lisa. Would someone please read, would someone please read from chapter 5 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, How It Works?
Hi, everyone. This is Liz A. in Florida.
Hi, Liz. Welcome.
Grateful, compulsive overeater, and food addict. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually, men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Thanks, I pass.
Thanks, Liz. Would someone please read the 12 steps of recovery.
Angela?
All done.
Angela? I'm not. Angela, you need to interpret.
Steps.
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Heidi. Welcome.
The 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Number 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Number 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so. Number 10, continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection.
Heidi. And would someone please read the 12 traditions of the program?
Hi, this is Carrie calling from Minnesota. I'm a grateful overeater.
Hi, Carrie. Thank
you. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Our welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
What do I do?
3.
Oh, we can't see you.
Gary. Yeah, I can't undo my video.
There we go. Hi,
okay.
Carrie.
Hello. What was I on? 3? The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The tools of recovery. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous are a program of recovery. Webster's Dictionary defines tool as any person or thing used to get something done. We have many tools of the program which will help us to recover on a daily basis. Tools are essential to get the job done, and they work for us. In order for a tool to work, it must be used.
Oh, no!
Yup. So too with our tools of recovery. I will ask that how sponsors explain how they use a particular tool with a limit of 3 minutes for each tool. Would someone be willing to be the timekeeper? Thank you, Mary. Virtual participants receive timing prompts via chat. Abstinence plan of eating.
Hi, my name is Debbie, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Debbie. Hi. Welcome.
Plan of eating. A food plan is a commitment to recovery. The HOW disciplines were designed for food-addicted people. We believe in a disciplined and structured approach. how abstainers do not modify their food plan to suit themselves and commit themselves to black and white abstinence. Deviations invite the return of many other problems. A food plan is not a personal thing in HOW. This means that we depend upon each other for the strength and growth that we need to remain abstinent. We join together in an effort to free the compulsive overeater from the bondage of food through the use of a food plan, positive thinking, and the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. We eat weighed and measured meals with nothing in between except sugar-free beverages and sugar-free gum. Food is written down, called into our sponsor, and committed so that we can get on with our recovery and out of the food. We also believe that negative thinking is a large part of our disease, so we abstain from negative thinking. Those of us who work the HOW program concepts use the following guidelines for food plans. 1, we do not write our own food plan. We use a food plan given to us by a doctor, nutritionist, or dietitian. We discuss it with our sponsor. We do not pick one that allows any of our binge foods. If some food on our plan becomes a problem, we avoid it. 2, unless approved by a sponsor, we do not skip meals, switch meals, or combine meals. We do not deviate or manipulate our food plan in any way. If we need to change our committed food during the day, we call a sponsor. 3, we weigh and measure all our portions so that there is no guesswork. We do not measure by eye. We use a measuring cup, spoon, and a scale. So I have here a scale. This is a digital scale. I don't have my spring-loaded scale, is broken. So all I have today is the digital. So I put my plate on here and I turn it on and I put my 3 ounces of protein on and then I zero it out. There's a little tear button here and that'll zero it out. And then I build the rest of my meal. And I weigh most of my food, but occasionally I do use measuring cups and spoons. So I have a measuring cup. If I'm going to have usually rice or something like that, I put it in the cup, I level it off and make sure that what's in the cup is mine, what's on the outside of the cup, that does not belong to me. I only get what's in the cup. And I usually try to pack in as much as I can that'll fit into that cup. I do the same thing with measuring spoons. So this is a teaspoon. If I'm going to do oil, peanut butter, anything like that, put it in, level it off, and then put it into my food. Some people use liquid measuring cups for milk or broth. And again, there's lines on here. So you just look at however much you get, if you get a half cup, if you get a cup, and you want to have it right at eye level. Don't hold it, but usually I put it on a shelf or I get down and I look and I want it right on the line. And when you're using a spring-loaded scale, that's the same thing you want to do. You want to make sure that you set it to zero, you put your food in the little place where the food goes, and then you look at the bar, and it should be right at zero. No more, no less. And then the phone. I use the phone to call my sponsor in the morning and to commit my food. And then during the day, if I need to make any kind of a food change or if one of the kids has eaten something and I don't have any more of it, then I will call my sponsor. If I can't get a hold of her, I will call 2 other sponsors. If it's a big deal and I've, you know, taken a few bites and dropped the rest of it on the floor or something like that, then I keep calling until I get a regular person. But for just a simple food change, you know, an orange for a banana or something like that, then I just leave a message after I've called 2 other people. We weigh ourselves once a month until we reach goal weight and once a week on maintenance. Unless advised otherwise by your doctor, we take a multivitamin and drink 64 ounces of water a day. We do not drink alcohol. We do not use foods containing sugar, except if sugar is listed fifth or beyond on the ingredients label. Above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. It is not the extra string bean that counts. It is the decision to take it. And you know that last that last sentence, it's not the extra string bean that counts, it's the decision to take it. And decision is the key word here. For me, it's making that decision to take something that either A, I have not committed, or B, is not on my food plan and therefore not committed. That's what gets me in trouble. You know, I have a tendency to get lost in my own head, and I can rationalize anything. I can, you know, take one little tiny 0.05 over on my fat, my cheese for my fat. And before you know it, I have turned that piece of cheese into, you know, nachos. It's that easy for me. I mean, and I can do that. So I need to be really aware of what I'm doing and what kind of decisions I'm allowing myself to make, and when it's time to turn those decisions over to somebody else. I'm going on a trip. I leave early tomorrow morning. I'm taking my grandson to Harry Potter Universe in Orlando for Halloween. So it's going to be a great time. But I've been food prepping. You know, I have a carry-on suitcase, and I've got loaves in it. I've got nuts in it. I've got starches. I've got everything that I am going to need on this trip, so that I'm covered. And I've got a plan. I know I've got a refrigerator where I'm going. I know how to get from the resort we're staying at to the little grocery store to pick up the fresh fruits and vegetables that I'm going to need while I'm there. And, you know, that's what works for me. I can't go there without a plan. Otherwise, I will not stay abstinent. Again, it's that decision. And when I'm hungry or when I'm tired and I'm away from home, my decision-making skills are not good at all. So by doing the meeting tonight and by prepping my food and packing everything and making sure that I have my plan in place, I know that I can do tomorrow what I've done today, and everything's going to be okay. So thank you for letting me share, and I will pass.
Thank you, Debbie. Sponsorship.
Hi, everybody. I'm a gratefully recovering compulsive overeater and food addict. My name is Revy Tal.
Hi, Revy Tal. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here tonight. Okay, sponsorship. Sponsors are OA members who are committed to abstinence and to living the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of their ability. We ask a sponsor to guide us through our program of recovery on all three levels, physical, emotional, and spiritual. In working with other members of OA and sharing their experience, strength, and hope, sponsors continually renew and reaffirm their own sobriety. Sponsors share their program up to the level of their own experience. Ours is a program of attraction. Find a sponsor who has what you want and ask how it was achieved. A member may work with more than one sponsor and may change sponsors at will. A HOW sponsor is a compulsive overeater who has completed at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence and who has taken the first three steps of the program. Sponsors have also completed at least 70 days of assignments. Did I read that right? Yeah. Okay. Reflections to the sponsor, suggestions for discussion. No list of reflections and meditations are end-alls and be-alls for the newcomer. A sponsor must be attentive not only to what the new person is saying, but also what the newcomer is not saying. There are many newcomers who are reticent to purchase books, who are hesitant to throw themselves headlong into the program. Therefore, we have a list of pre-commitment assignments. Above all, do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. Excuse me. It is not the extra string bean that is the problem. It's the decision to have it that results in some trouble. The HOW concept is an alternative for people who have tried everything else, and therefore the who have tried everything else. Therefore, the program is an immutable triumvirate of tools, steps, and traditions. Using the tools of weighing and measuring our food, sponsors, meetings, phone calls, reading and writing, service, and anonymity, we follow the 12 steps and 12 traditions of OA in order to free ourselves from the bondage of food addictions. Sponsors do not have the right to play God. We help each other. Okay, so once again, I'm a gratefully recovering compulsive overeater and food addict, and my name is Revy Tao. My experience has been that the two roles a sponsor would play is to support and to share experience, strength, and hope. And just like the reading says, it's not up to me to meddle in anyone's food. It's not up to me to call the shots, be the boss, play God. However, if there is an issue around communication, it's really important to keep in mind that myself as a sponsor, I'm a compulsive overeater and I'm just as vulnerable as the next person. It's one day at a time here in this program. And sometimes it's even one meal at a time or one moment at a time on really rough days. And so there's something synergistic that happens when I am able to get out of myself and help someone else by sponsoring their program. And that's huge for me. Even when I ask people, would you sponsor my program as opposed to sponsoring me? This is my program and it's about my relationship with God, the spiritual program, what comes through group conscience, whether it's a group of two people, the sponsor and myself, or a whole room full of people. We've often heard the saying, you know, God comes in through group conscience. I never know what someone is going to say, whether it's a sponsee talking to me or myself talking to a sponsor or a trusted fellow, when all of a sudden this eureka is going to happen. You know, why didn't I think of this? Wow, that's cool. So it's all about support. It's not about playing God. And I also remember as a new sponsor, I felt really nervous, a lot of anxiety. I thought it was all up to me, all on my shoulders. It's not. The two roles from my experience, and of course I don't speak on behalf of everyone in the room, but from what I learned about program, the two roles a sponsor plays are to witness and to share experience, strength, and hope, period. And that may come across as suggestions. Anyhow, thanks for letting me share tonight.
Will all sponsors, How and OA, please join me in sharing the following. 1, how long in OA and How. 2, how long abstinent in OA or How. 3, how much weight lost or gained. This is not a time for sharing for sponsors. Please keep it brief and no applauding between sponsors. If they wish to, sponsors can announce that they have an opening for a sponsee and provide their phone numbers. Do I read this out loud? You may line up starting at the microphone and continuing around the room to the right. Remote sponsors are invited to share following our line by clicking the raise hand button and turning on your video camera or just turning on your video. When it is your turn to share, you will hear your name and see a "you are unmuted by host" screen prompt. Following your share, please turn off your video as the meeting moderator remutes your line. Sponsors joining us on the phone, please wait for a pause in the line and press star and 6 on your telephone keypad.
Hi, I'm Howard, a compulsive overeater. I'm a sponsor on the late shift. I've been abstaining a little over 33 years. I have 18 years and 4 months of abstinence in OA How. I've gained 10 pounds and a little bit of sanity.
Good evening. I'm Mary G., compulsive overeater. Came to OA in Western Massachusetts in the spring of 2004. When we moved to Minnesota, I came to OA on Thursday, Halloween, and became abstinent the next day, and I've lost and maintained 75 pounds.
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater. I came directly into How in October of 2007. I lost 150 pounds and kept it off for 7 years and chose to leave the program. I returned almost 3 years later, 110 pounds up, and I'm currently 68 pounds down.
Evening, everybody. My name is Robert, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I first came to OA sometime in the early 1990s. I came to OA Hal for the first time in July of 2017. My abstinence state is August the 23rd of 2017, and I've released about 100 pounds.
Pamela.
Okay, here I am, and I'm reading.
No, this is sponsor line.
Oh, sponsor line. I'm sorry. Pamela, compulsive overeater and food addict. I'm a two-hour how sponsor. I came into OA over 40 years ago. I stayed for 20. I was just there. I wasn't there for the tools or for the steps or any spiritual stuff. I was just there to get my figure back. And I stayed for 20 years and was abstinent for all that time. And then I dropped it for 20 years. And when I came back on June 22nd, 2016, I came right into OA How and have been working the How format ever since. I did have a technical slip on June 15th, 2017. So that's my new commitment date is June 15th, 2017. My weight loss or gain is between my sponsor, my nutritionist, my doctor, and my creator. And I don't have any openings at this time. Thank you.
Melanie.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm in Oregon. I am an OA two-hour house sponsor, thank God. And my mother introduced me to Overeaters Anonymous in the fall of 1989. And 17 years later, I was introduced to How, where I have now had my absence for about 14 years. My absence date is November 5th, 2005. And I have been maintaining over 165-pound weight loss for about 13 of those years. Melanie from Oregon. Thanks.
Debbie.
Hi, my name is Debbie. I am a compulsive overeater. I came to the rooms of OA in February of 2005, started working the How concept in October of 2006. My current abstinence date is October 12th, 2018, and I am down a little over 100 pounds, and I do not have an opening for a sponsor, or sponsee, and I pass.
Catherine.
Hi, I'm Catherine D, two-hour house sponsor from Florida, and I came into regular OA in the mid-1980s, didn't stay, went back out for many years, ended up finding OA 90 in the late 1990s, had some period of abstinence, and then lost it and struggled to regain abstinence for the next 20 years. I found two-hour OA How, and it's my back-to-back abstinence day. August 30th of 2017, and I'm maintaining 120-pound plus weight loss, and I don't have an opening. I pass.
Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris J. from Sterling Heights, Michigan. I came into OA How in January 2005, got serious April 2005 with a sponsor from Minnesota. My renewed abstinence date is July 26, 2007, and I've maintained a 123-pound weight loss. I do have an opening for a male sponsor. My phone number is 586-530-8971 Eastern Standard Time. Thank you.
Rebatel.
Grateful for you.
Hi there. I'm a gratefully recovering compulsive overeater and food addict. And my name is Revital again. And I walked into the OA rooms in 2004. Sat there for probably about 13 years without any sort of significant level of abstinence, other than dieting, really. And I didn't quite get it. And in 2017, I must have hit rock bottom, one of the worst times in my life. I was introduced through a particular group in Florida to the 2-hour OA How rooms in Sarasota. I instantly became abstinent and continue to remain abstinent to this day by the grace of God, the power of this program. My body has released over 100 pounds and I don't have any openings right now. Thank you.
Kelly. Can't hear you. Judy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Start video. Hi, this is Jody, and I'm in Minnesota. And I first entered the rooms of How in November 2009. My current abstinence date is July 6, 2016. And since that date, I've been relieved of 100 pounds. Thanks.
Rebecca.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rebecca B., and I'm in Ohio. I came to regular OA back in September of 2014. Lost the weight, about 110 pounds total, got to where I needed to be. Snowballed into relapse, came out of relapse and directly into OA How after 2.5 years back in February. And since then, I've lost about 40 of the 70 or so pounds I regained. And I'm an OA 2-hour How sponsor. Pass.
Is there anyone on the phone that would like to do *6 and be on the sponsor line?
I'd like to be in the sponsor line. This is Lisa in Portland. Hi, I stumbled into OA, general OA in the 1970s and wandered in and out over the next few decades. I came to OA How, 2-hour OA How in October of 2015. My recommitted abstinence date is March 25th of 2017, and I'm maintaining a weight that is somewhere over 75 pounds from my highest known weight. Thank you.
We should remember that all OAs have clay feet. We should not or him out as a perfect OA. It is not fair to the person to be singled out in this fashion, and if the person is wise, she or he will not wish it. If the person we single out as an ideal OA has a fall, we are in danger of falling too. Without exception, we are all only one bite away from a binge. No matter how long we have been in OA or How, nobody is entirely safe. OA itself should be our ideal, not any particular member of it. Anonymity.
I need to sit up a little. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. All right. Anonymity. Anonymity is a tool as well as a tradition because it guarantees that we will place principles before personalities. It offers each of us freedom of expression and protection against gossip. Anonymity assures us that only we as individual OA members have the right to make our membership known within our community. Anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication means that we never allow our faces or last names to be used once we identify ourselves as OA members. Within the fellowship, anonymity means that whatever we share with another OA member will be held in respect and confidence. What we hear at meetings should remain there. It should be understood, however, that anonymity must not be used to limit our effectiveness within the fellowship. It is not a break of anonymity to give our names and addresses to the secretary of our group or to other service offices of OAs for the purpose of conducting OA business, which is primarily 12-step work. It is likewise not a break of anonymity to enlist 12-step help from group members in trouble, provided we are careful to omit specific personal information. If their disease has reactivated and we persist in protecting their anonymity, we may, in effect, help kill them and their anonymity. Anonymity is the part of the program that allows each of us to stand in front of our fellows and share for the first time, honestly, who we are, where we have been, and where we hope to go, without fear that our story will be told outside these rooms. For many of us, the OA rooms are the first place where we have no fear of being judged or criticized. We are accepted as we are at that moment. This is the first time for most of us that we experience sharing where we are not told what we did wrong. We come into OA at rock bottom, mangled emotionally, physically, and spiritually. We are supported back to health with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. We are encouraged to speak of our pain, and we are lovingly told your secrets are safe. Come share our recovery, recovery on a threefold level, physical, emotional, and spiritual. Lastly, a word to newcomers. Please join us. However, if you decide that our program is not for you, please remember that our anonymity allows us to grow and recover from a very serious disease. Whom you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here, here, here.
All right. Here, here, here.
And I am Tamla, compulsive overeater and food addict, and a 2-hour house sponsor, which I enjoy. And anonymity is... Sorry about that, my phone's going off. Okay. All right, lost my thoughts now. Anonymity is not only a tool, but part of our tradition. And when I came into OA How, I've already had spent decades in another 12-step program. And the anonymity there, in my experience was our anonymity. We knew who our sponsors were. We knew who was sponsoring who the sponsees were. In OA, how we don't do that. And it's such a blessing. It really has given me a lot of lessons because I come from a gossipy upbringing, and I would just thrive on someone else's gossip about someone. And that's not what this program's all about. And, you know, we don't know who our who's sponsoring who the sponsees are. We don't indulge who our sponsor is. And that's a blessing, because how can we change sponsors at will if we know that someone else is having a problem with that sponsor? It's for our own lessons that we need to learn about others, how others sponsor. This is really something. One of my first meetings I came to, a sponsor got up and shared on anonymity, and they said, "Even if you run to me in the store, we don't acknowledge each other." Well, it was either the next day or the day after I went into a grocery store, and there she was in my aisle. And I went up to her and I whispered to her, "Hi, how are you doing? And can I count this as my hookup call?" She said, "No, you give me a call when you get home." And, and you know, it's really funny because when I share that, she always chuckles now because she knows who I'm talking about. And anonymity is the foundation of this program. You know, we don't gossip about other people. And I have learned, and I'm taking it back to my other 12-step program, I don't gossip about anybody anymore. And you know, I'm not a youngster in the 12-step program, and I'm not a youngster, period. You know, and to know that I can keep my mouth shut and that a sponsee can trust me not to talk about her to anyone else. And it's a good, you know, it's been a great lesson for me, and I appreciate you allowing me to be service in your program. Again, I apologize about my phone. I couldn't shut the speaker off on it. So you have a great evening and enjoy the meeting.
Thanks Pamela.
Welcome.
Telephone calls.
There we go. Oh, I'm unmuted. Hi, it's Lisa again in Portland, Oregon. Gratefully recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, let's see here. Oh, there are my readings. Ta-da. Hi. Compulsive overeating is a disease of isolation. The telephone is a means of communicating with another compulsive overeater between meetings. It provides an immediate outlet for those hard-to-handle highs and lows we all experience. The telephone is also a daily link to our sponsors and, as part of the surrender process, is a tool by which we learn to ask for help, reach out, and extend that same help to others. And how we are asked to make at least four telephone calls a day, one to our sponsor and three more to other OA members. These calls give us an opportunity to talk program on a daily basis. The telephone is our lifeline. Excuse me. And I took this tool, although I don't know that I have anything new to say about it. Just to bore you guys enough that sometime one of you will take a tool that hasn't. No, I'm just kidding. It was difficult initially to make phone calls for me, but my sponsor said, call other sponsors. And so that's what I did. And she said, just ask them how they work the program and how it's worked for them, and ask them to tell you their story. And so, you know, I didn't have to worry about what I was going to say on the phone because I had this conversation. And then as time went by, my sponsor would suggest to me that I talk to other people about issues that I was struggling with, my personal life or wrestling with my food plan or thinking about my body weight or something like that. And, you know, the beauty of anonymity is that I can talk about anything on those phone calls. And I have talked about some pretty darn personal stuff on these phone calls. Not initially, you know, it took a while to build this network of fellows on the phone, but over time it's gotten so that I've got a bunch of people on the East Coast and a bunch of people in Central Time and a bunch of people on the West Coast that I know really quite well that I can call and I can really talk to about anything. Making phone calls helps me learn how to listen and pay attention and not give unasked for advice. It helps me let myself be vulnerable. And, you know, I think without the phone calls, I'd probably talk myself into the idea that I didn't need to keep doing this program. But, you know, every day I talk to people that talk about how well it's working for them. And, you know, the interesting thing is when we come in here, a lot of us are focused on weight and body size. And I can't remember talking about that on the phone with almost anybody. I have had people who wanted to vent about their sponsors. And, you know, that's great because of anonymity. We can say, my sponsor wants me to do this. And don't you think that's silly? And then the other person says, well, actually, I did that. And this is what the benefit was to me. So it really does help us work the program. Recently, there's been this new WhatsApp group, which has people all over the world. And it's an incredible tool, essentially a telephone tool that makes it really possible to almost immediately find folks to talk to on the phone. And so I think that that's been a great boon to a lot of people. I'm retired and I have a fair amount of time to make phone calls, but I know there are people that work and have kids and, you know, don't really have time to sit and call 20 people to try to reach somebody. So I think that's a great boon. And, yeah, maybe that's all I have to say about this. I'm just very grateful for all the people that have helped me out in this program. And it really has felt like a lifeline sometimes. And sometimes it just feels like I've got a whole bunch of really great friends that I know are doing this with me. So that's all I've got. This is Lisa, your recovering compulsive overeater, very grateful in Portland, Oregon. Thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Meetings.
Hello, Rebecca B., compulsive overeater.
Hi, Rebecca.
Tool 5, meetings. Meetings are gatherings of two or more compulsive eaters who come together to share their experience before and after recovery and to share the strength and hope OA has given them. Meetings are an opportunity for us to identify and confirm our common problem by relating to one another and by sharing the gifts we receive through this program. We find that being on time for meetings enhances our recovery and provide service to the meeting. Excuse me. Though there are many kinds of meetings, fellowship is the basis of them all. As HOW members, we attend at least one HOW meeting a week. Okay, so I have wanted to talk about meetings since the last meeting, and shame on me because I could have talked about meetings at any one of the other meetings in between this last week and today. But I can't tell you how great meetings are. It has really been helpful for me to attend meetings as often as I can. I have one meeting a week, at least, where I am, and this is my meeting, where I am dedicated to sitting here, to paying attention. The video makes it that much easier and more possible. But I often have a meeting, a podcast, or something going on in my ears. or my speakers at work or something, just to keep soaking it in. But the problem is meetings alone will not keep you food sober. You will not have abstinence even, let alone recovery, if you, all you are doing is going to meetings. I know this because when I was trying to crawl out of relapse that lasted for about 2 years, I tried. Man, I was listening to phone meetings. They have a meeting every single hour, just about around the clock. And I was listening to, I think it was in, I went back to my in-person meeting one Sunday and reported that, you know, I listened to, God, 36 hours, what was it, like 12 hours of meetings in 24 hours or whatever, you know, like something crazy, just that means I'm abdicating my responsibilities at home and all kinds of things. But, but darn it, it's kept me abstinent. Well, no, it's just kept me distracted. It hasn't kept me sober. And that's what I found was the minute the meetings turned off, when I wasn't working the steps, was the minute I was back on the food, more or less. And it's just the meetings are, can be so amazing for fellowship, for seeing hope, feeling hope, sharing hope. And I hope I have still shared that with you guys today. But yeah, the meetings can, going to meetings alone will not keep you sober. So, but all the while, please enjoy the meetings because I do. Thanks.
Thanks, Rebecca. Literature and writing.
Literature and writing. We studied the book Alcohol.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Mary.
Hi, Mary. Welcome.
We studied the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous, referred to as the Big Book, and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, another AA book to reinforce our program. By substituting the words food and compulsive eating for the words alcohol and alcoholism, we can identify closely. We also read OA literature, the OA book, Overeaters Anonymous, referred to as the Brown Book, the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions for today, for daily meditation, and Lifeline, our journal of recovery. Read on a daily basis, our literature impresses on us certain basic truths that we have found vital to our growth. Our literature and the AA books are an ever-available tool that gives insight into our problem, as well as the strength to deal with it and the very real hope that there is a solution for us. Writing. In addition to our writing our inventories and the list of people we have harmed, most of us have found that writing has been an indispensable tool for working the steps. Further, putting our thoughts and feelings down on paper or describing a troubling incident helps us to better understand our actions and reactions in a way that is often not revealed to us by simply thinking or talking about them. In the past, compulsive eating was our most common reaction to life. When we put our difficulties down on paper, it becomes easier to see situations more clearly and perhaps discern any necessary action. So I want to start with a cute little story. I have a 7-year-old granddaughter, and she's just starting to do her own reading and writing. She has a little book that, or she has a, what do you call it, a chapter book, and she's supposed to reflect on that a couple times a week. And when she told me that, I said, oh, that's great. I said, I love to read and write. And she kind of looked at me kind of, you know, like, oh, really? And then she said, oh, she said, that's part of your daily discipline, right? It's like, wow, she like really gets it. But I was feeling a little sad today because had I known she had that assignment when they were over yesterday, she could have done her assignment. And I could have sat there and done mine as well. And just to show her how valuable it is to read something with care and thought and then write on it. And in my own program, what I've found, I'm coming up on a 7-year anniversary now, is I found it's really important to find the time of day when I'm alert and aware. For me, that's in the morning, to do my reading and writing, because it's so important to me to get down my reflections on what I'm reading that I don't want to be too tired when I do it. I've moved that into the sort of a center part of my program. But in the beginning, I was you know, reading and writing on the big book. And we sure went through that with a fine tooth comb. And I have all those writings. Someday when I'm bedridden or something, I probably will reread what I had said. But every time we go through the big book, especially the 12 and 12, I gain new insights. I see it with a different pair of eyes than I did when I first started the program. I've always enjoyed writing. So this is one tool that I really have thrived on. And it's nice to know that my enthusiasm for it is carrying on to both my children and my grandchildren. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Mary. Service.
Hi, this is Catherine D. from Florida, to our house
Hi,
sponsor.
Catherine.
Hi. Service, carrying the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers, is the basic purpose of our fellowship and therefore the most fundamental form of service. Any service, no matter how small, that will help reach a fellow sufferer adds to the quality of our own recovery. Putting away chairs, talking to newcomers, doing whatever needs to be done in a group or for OA as a whole are ways in which we give back what we have so generously been given. Do what you can when you can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as the result of working the 12 steps. Service fulfills that promise. Always extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. Those of us working the how concept also believe that our greatest service is abstinence. I definitely agree with that. When I first got abstinent, I think I was really, you know, kind of thinking that I didn't have anything to offer at all. I was pretty unsure of myself and lacked a lot of confidence in life and, you know, felt that I certainly wouldn't have been of service just showing up. But I always think of this, I love the cliches, but this really isn't a me program, it's a we program, and it really does count on all of us. So for me, I feel like even from the first moment you walk in, the newcomer is probably one of the most valuable service, I guess, people that we have. And, you know, we rely on them heavily even to have a program. But for me, whether I'm going to a meeting in person, whether I'm just picking up the phone because somebody calls, I mean, sometimes it's an inopportune time, but I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe they have a food change. You know, that's doing service. Being asked to speak and saying yes is a, you know, doing service. Pretty much whatever ever we do that, you know, gets us out of ourselves and allows OA to continue is a valuable service for the program and for ourselves. And I find really for myself that, you know, just like it says in the literature, all through the literature, that, you know, the big book, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic, in this case, obviously, another food addict. But whenever I'm carrying the message, or, you know, just trying to do something for someone else, it definitely always helps me out, probably way more than the person who I'm trying to help or the situation I'm trying to help, I guess.
Will all people doing service for OA at any level please stand and applaud service? If you have not added your information to the chat for our We Care book, please take a moment to do so now so we can add it to the book here in the room. We will keep the We Care book circulating until everyone has had an opportunity to sign it. The folder will continue to circulate for the duration of the meeting so that everyone may take names and phone numbers for their personal contacts. Enter your email in the chat to receive the list. Is there anyone who has not yet signed? The Minnesota OA How Live meeting is a friendly place, and we want to get to know each other. If you are here with us today for the first time in the meeting room, will you please stand and introduce yourself by your first name only?
I'm Erin.
Hi, Erin. Welcome. If you are attending for the first time virtually, please click the raise hand icon, turn on your camera or press star and six on your telephone keypad. Okay. May we please have a treasurer's report?
Hi, I'm Heidi, still compulsive overeater, recovering. And treasurer for this meeting, our current balance is $965.78, and I paid the November rent tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, Heidi. Our seventh tradition helps this meeting provide the equipment, enhance our website, make it accessible to individuals who are deaf or anyone using ASL, refine the technology, develop other live OA face-to-face groups, and more. A basket will be passed for those here in the room and those joining virtually. You may go to mnhowlive.org to donate.
Oh, that's what that's for.
Hooray. We've got some bad news for you.
Oh, no.
It was bad news for us, and it will probably be bad news for you. Whether you quit 6 days, months, or years, if you go out and take the first compulsive bite of food, you'll end up just like you have been in the past. You are a compulsive eater from the big book, page 187. I did not make it up. All right. Are there any announcements here in the room or virtually? Okay. Literature and books. Newcomer and sponsor materials are located at the Virtual Intergroups resource page at www.oahowphonemeetings.com. You can purchase OA books and pamphlets at bookstore.oa.org. It is now time for medallions. At How Meetings, we recognize the milestones of recovery for those working the How program. All other OA abstinence is given a round of applause. Anyone joining us virtually may also request a medallion by turning on your camera, raising your hand, sending a chat message, or unmuting your phone. Okay. So here are our medallions. And we do that at other hall meetings. We shake the box. At other hell meetings, we also have instructions inside our box, but we don't hear, so I gotta wing it. We celebrate milestones of recovery. Is anyone celebrating 15 to 20 or more years of continuous abstinence? Tonight. Anybody celebrating 10 to 14 years? 5 to 9 years. Next week, that's pretty exciting. 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, sorry, 18 months, 1 year. Then we go to 9 months. We have a 9-monther. Just an ASL taking over.
Yes.
Okay. 6 months. 3 months.
Right here.
Oh ho!
Hey,
3 months, right? That is a big damn deal.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Heidi.
Very much.
Yay.
Thank you.
Let's see. The Red Hot Chili Pepper. Nope. That's 1 month. We're going to do 2 months first. Anybody celebrating 2 months? Or 1 month, which is a really big deal. 1 month. All right. And finally, we have our 24-hour medallion. This is for anybody. It doesn't mean you've been abstinent for 24 hours. It just means that you want to kind of shore up your commitment to abstinence or just have a different approach to food in your life. Would anyone like a 24-hour medallion? Well, that's that, Thundercat. Thank you, everybody. And congratulations again to Heidi. Step ups. At this point in our meeting, we ask the group to join us as we celebrate another example of the miracles that I think this should be abound in AA. The stepping up portion of the meeting, ask a sponsor to introduce a newcomer who has at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence, who has completed the first three steps of the program, and who is now ready to become a sponsor. At HAL meetings, new sponsors are presented with a cactus plant to signify the tough love of the program. Stick with the stickers, remember to drink your water, and reminder that we don't water down the program. Are there any step-ups? Okay, anniversaries. Birthdays are celebrated for each year of continuous abstinence from the OA Group Handbook, page 10. At anniversaries, a candle is lit at the beginning of the meeting. We invite the person who is celebrating an anniversary to come to the front of the room for the anniversary reading. Are there any anniversaries? Not tonight. Virtual, soon, I'm told. All right, next week. Virtual attendees may sign up to celebrate your step-ups or anniversaries via the link on our website. The leader now qualifies for 10 minutes. Ta-da, that's me. I'm Robert, and I am a compulsive overeater. Welcome, everybody. Well, like I said in the sponsor line, I first came to OA somewhere in the early 1990s. I had been sober in AA a few years at that point, and I had started my sobriety time at what I thought was a reasonable weight. But then I also put down the cigarettes, and I started to pick up the food more. And my weight started to kind of slowly creep up. And then I would find some sort of an eating fad, a diet, and I would lose some weight. And then I would slowly gain it back again. You'll be able to see some of that in my pictures. Oh, there they are sitting over there. Anyway, so I'm staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps. And somewhere in the early 2000s, I start to see some of these women. Oh, look at that cute little boy. Oh, gosh. At my home group, these ladies, they just love seeing baby pictures. So I started putting those in my pictures. Anyway, somewhere in the early 2000s, I was noticing some people in OA, or in AA, they started to go to this weird thing called OA How. And they were doing this weird stuff, like doing all this writing and reading it out loud to their sponsors. And they were like getting up from a table at a restaurant to call their sponsor because the potato was wrong. And I thought, oh, that's just for chicks. That's not for me. All that writing stuff. And as you can see in the pictures, the weight was just going up and down and up. And I got to a point again in 2016 about, and I called one of these women. I was actually coming back from an AA roundup in Omaha. And I said, all right, tell me about this meeting you go to. And I didn't know it was 2 hours, right? And she said, you know, I had, it's just like a 6 hour drive, 6.5 hour drive from Omaha back to Minneapolis. And she said, you know, you still got time to make the meeting. You'll be here at least for the second hour. There's a good male speaker tonight that you can hear. I said, 2 hours? That's insane. You know, I was willing to consider all the reading and writing and phone calls, but the 2 hour meeting, no way. So 11 months later, I decided I would go to my first OA HOW meeting. And that was that meeting that I went to. So it only took me 11 months after finding out about it to make it. And it was pretty quick. Seeing the sponsor line, but which really impressed me, the sponsor line, but hearing the readings about me, about my illness, about my compulsion, it just sunk in. And I come from a Christian upbringing, and we used to call that being convicted. I felt really convicted, like, oh God, this is me. Oh, I am that bad. I don't necessarily recall picking anything out of the garbage and eating it, or, you know, I liked burnt toast actually. And, you know, still do actually. There was a lot of insanity, and speaking of insanity, and by the way, I feel like I'm doing the AA program like it was originally meant to do, more seriously than I ever did it before I started to howl. All right, here's what I want to read. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. And I love this line. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart. And anyway... skipping ahead, thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. And then skipping ahead a little more, you may think this an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. Certainly includes me. And I realized that this kind of serious alcoholism applies to me with my food compulsion, my addiction to food. I have no rational reason, reasonable thinking approach when it comes to food. I just can't manage it. There's no off switch. I'm completely addicted to sugar and eating. So that's why I heard a speaker recently refer to the abstinence kit as a voodoo kit. Yeah, there's some kind of magic that happens there. The magic being, if I put my food in a cup, as we say, it gets out of my head. Then it's my meal. I can look forward to my meal. I can enjoy my meal. And then I can get on with my life, what I'm supposed to be doing and thinking and focusing on next. My job, being of service to others, you know, driving with reason on the interstate. Showing up in life as a better son, as a better friend, and also putting down the food, all of a sudden, I'm not medicating what has stayed medicated for so long anymore. And there are feelings that I am feeling now that I didn't feel before. And not all of them are pleasant. In fact, a lot of them are unpleasant. And something I have found out that's pretty common, you know, and the way that I find these things out that's pretty common is by these daily phone calls that we do. So it isn't just for chicks, it's for this chick too. And the reason all of these things are, I don't know who thought this all up. You know, based on the whatever and the whoozy that we talk about at the beginning of our meeting, it was kind of gelled together, just something that works for us seriously food addicted people. And one of those things is those daily phone calls. And one of the things that I find out is over time, you know, we are developing this trust and relationships with the people we talk to over time, like Lisa mentioned. And we start to find out things that, you know, a lot of us have in common. Some serious abuse growing up. A lot of us have you know, just even some of the same stuff that alcoholics have, you know, low self-esteem. And we have all of these tools that seem to work to be able to actually heal and recover, like the steps, for example, and sharing those, going through those steps and going through those first 80 questions and the writing assignments there, sharing them out loud with a sponsor, getting our thoughts down on paper, and putting my food in a cup. And then I start to kind of put my life in a cup too. And I start to recover and treat those bad feelings, and do more esteemable things to have better self-esteem, and actually begin to recover at a deeper level so that I can keep the food in a cup, and trust, learn to trust my nutritionist, learn to trust my sponsor, and other sponsors in OA How, the experience that's shared in meetings, the trust of my dependence upon you guys as my higher power to, you know, maintain that contact and to continue my recovery. So I'm staying, you know, I've released about 100 pounds since that summer of 2017. I was pushing 3 bills again. And I can't get over 300. I'm sure I tipped the scale at 300. I just didn't ever measure that. The last I measured was 297. And now it's not that anymore. Thank heavens. So, and I want to keep growing, you know, and I'm going to stop saying, you know, I'm going to shut up and be done. Thank you. I would like to introduce, I don't know who our guest speaker is.
It's Catherine.
I'd like to introduce Catherine, our guest who qualifies for 20 minutes. Catherine.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I'm a compulsive overeater in recovery. Working
Hi,
the
Catherine.
2 hour.
Welcome.
Hi, and thank you so much for your qualification, Robert. So much I could identify with. So what it was like, how I got here, and what it's like now. I always speak extemporaneously and always have a heart attack right before I speak, thinking, what am I going to say? And generally after I speak, I'm like, oh, wow, why didn't I say that? But anyway, I did say quite a few prayers and ask God to give me the words. So hopefully the best thing about turning it over is then I can just say, oh, well, God must not have wanted me to say that. So gets me off the hook. But anyway, I was born, I always like to say this in my qualification, I was born very self-centered, an only child, and my parents tried for like 10 years to have children. I used to always think they tried 10 years to have me, but then I said after they had to bring me up and I put them through, they probably wouldn't have tried so hard had they known. But at any rate, food was a big deal right from the start. I was always a normal weight when I was young. I don't have pictures of when I was young yet in my book of pictures, but food was still big. The biggest stories I heard, my mom was a nurse but came from a farm family, and I remember just anecdotally she would say things like my grandfather would say when I was 6 months old and she was feeding me a bowl of pablum, I guess that was massive, that, you know, you're going to kill that kid, Betty. So probably when most babies would be being, you know, still on a bottle, I was like eating massive bowls of cereal. And then I would hear things like that I ate liverwurst and Swiss cheese or something unbearable like that at midnight with my dad when I was like 3 or 4. So it was always a lot of esteem put to how much I could eat. That I was a big eater, I had a hollow leg, you know, I could really put it away, all that stuff. And my dad was somewhat overweight, not a lot. My mom was normal weight. I remember having an addiction to sugar right from the get-go. My mom at one point was bedridden, she had injured her back, and I was pretty young. My dad was in the service and he had to leave for work. I was also told this story, but I kind of vaguely remember there was a time lapse before my babysitter would be there or whoever was helping her, and she couldn't get out of the bed because her back was injured, and I was climbing over the stove to get sugar out of, I guess, where it was hidden, eating that. And I can also remember eating sugar directly out of the sugar bowl, like taking bites of butter off the stick. I mean, just things that I have 4 children and I've never seen them do. So I don't know if you can be kind of a budding food addict right from birth, but if that's possible. I think that was probably my story. I also, you know, ate weird things. I remember my mom saying that I ate a light bulb off a Christmas tree, you know, like a little glass bulb, and that the doctor laughed and told her she should probably start feeding me more and to just put cotton batten in my cereal, because if I ate the light bulb, I would probably eat the cotton batting and, you know, that would absorb the glass. After that, I don't really have a lot of memories until probably the first abnormal eating memory I have when I was about 10 years old. I had a friend, and I did always have friends that seemed to be super thin, and I wanted to be like them. So even though, and I was pretty young when I felt that way, so even though I was normal weight, when I look back in pictures, I always thought it was heavy, but then I saw later, well, I really wasn't heavy. I was basically totally normal weight. I would end up with these super, super thin friends and want to be like them. And so I remember getting a box of donuts and saying, oh my gosh, we can go eat these all in the woods ourselves. And she was like, why would we want to do that? And I think that was the first point when I realized that I was different. My relationship with food and probably also what I was using food for was different from how other people related to food. After that point, my father retired from the service. We had been living in Florida at that point, and I moved to Vermont. And I know there was a lot of disturbance in my life. When I was quite a bit older, I'd seen a doctor's record that my mom had ended up with, and it said put on Valium for emotional disturbance. And I don't really remember any emotional disturbance at all, but I don't know to this day what it was that was so disturbing that they would put somebody that young on Valium, but yeah, I'm sure it was pretty short term. But that ends up being a pretty big part of my story, because being a nurse, my mom was always giving me stuff for, like, I had tons of allergies, chronic bronchitis. So I was on medication containing alcohol and drugs from the time I was really young. I remember her saying stories like, oh, you know, you were so sick as a dog. I gave you your medicine and you were bouncing off the walls. And so, you know, I know there was stuff in that, which ends up being, you know, part of my story is that I used food and used food to stuff down feelings, to cover up feelings of loneliness. After I moved, I kind of always was a social chameleon. We had to move a lot, so I tended to try to make friends really quickly. Didn't really have much of a sense of who I was, but just tried to fit in. And when I went to Vermont, I think the whole family, which was three of us, was pretty depressing. My mom and dad were both ended up being recovered alcoholics. My mom was a really serious heavy drinker. My dad was just kind of out of it. And I was God knows where. And I, you know, it's funny because it took me probably a long, long time in program to realize that I never wanted to blame them. I always blamed myself for everything that went wrong in the house. And really there was no blame, I guess, to attach to them. And I love them very much, but definitely my surroundings impacted me. But I do think it to some extent, I think I was just born an addict. So I was always using food, but once I got to a certain age, like 13, 14, I turned to drugs and alcohol, where I started actively using them. And basically at that point, it was all kind of wrapped up in one. I was just, off and running. I used to say that I think I would get addicted to substances in direct proportion to how far they could take me from myself, my insecurity, I always call it a God-sized hole in my soul. You know, I would try to fill that with everything. I basically was a train wreck in the drug and alcohol department and was, you know, a real serious addict and was, thank you God, got sober at 23. So I got sober when I was really young. And as soon as I got sober, the big book does have a lot of helpful tips about using chocolate or just keeping a little bit of sugar around to, you know, kill the cravings. And I felt like that was a step up, using the sugar and the, you know, whatever sweet things I could make. My mom and I got into baking. She got sober about the same time I did, which was kind of nice. The house had a whole new environment, you know, with two people sober. And I had a really good program, you know, for a lot of years. I mean, I worked the steps through the big book. I found a higher power, which solved pretty much all my problems. I still had defects and, you know, still had self-will run riot and some things like that. Ended up in a bad marriage, couple of them, actually, because I was sober a long time and I was really young and I made a lot of mistakes. But anyway, although I don't count those as mistakes today because they all go into making me who I am. And I had four beautiful children. So that was a real gift from my higher power because I certainly didn't think that was in my future and the condition I was in when I got to that point. But anyway, food for a long time. I could exercise a lot. I was really active. I was always really good. The diets, I mean, I can go into the diets, that whole trying every imaginable thing. I mean, I did Nutrisystem, Weight Watchers more than once. I actually lost a ton of weight, like for a week in Weight Watchers, but then started manipulating all the points and combinations, would eat all my points by like 10 and then say, oh, the heck with it. And then, you know, be off and running. I could always, I'd say, gain and lose 10, 20 pounds, no problem, especially for like a new relationship or, you know, to look good or whatever. I could, you know, dump weight, go to the gym 6 days a week. So I always ate a lot, but I had ways, it seemed, to manage it and to stay a normal weight to thin. When I was using drugs and alcohol, I could actually stay pretty thin. And that's what I wanted to be, is thin. So I definitely, originally, the first time came to OA for the vanity, because I knew, always knew I was out of control. I knew that if I took one bite, I'd be off and running. I always knew, actually, I was really good at either not eating or eating everything. I was not good at moderation. And that was pretty much the story of my life and everything. So I had a, you know, happy, joyous, and free in AA, but started using food more and more. Had some self-will-run riot decisions that, you know, got me really even away from the AA program, although, thank you God, I did not pick up. But I did just, you know, use food more and more and fight more and more with food. I tried a lot to use AA. You know, I had a lot of suggestions to use the 12 steps. And I've had people say, you know, we're kind of horrified when I say, well, the 12 steps actually, you know, to me, for me, the 12 steps without the tools don't work for me at all. You know, they don't, because it's just kind of a different kind of addiction. Like the person I was, I'm just a low bottom addict to food. So when I eat food, I can't stop eating food. And I have to have a serious set of tools on a daily basis to keep me abstinent. And that's just my experience. The other thing I've kind of, I think, learned over the years is everyone isn't the same. You know, so my OA experience, I went to regular OA when I was probably only a couple of years sober, and I didn't find any recovery there. Everyone was much heavier. And this was in my very small rural town in northern Vermont. And it seemed like, you know, there wasn't anything that attracted me at that point. So then I went out and about, and then I can start showing some of my pictures. I got pregnant, and my first pregnancy, here is this picture, if you can see it, is when I was, that was young, and I think I was even sober then and thin, you know, and that's how I could stay if I was exercising and food had not gotten that big yet in my life. But then I got pregnant, and my first pregnancy, I gained 60 pounds. And that was a real problem. And then my second pregnancy came 15 months after my first pregnancy. And I remember gaining all that weight and thinking, oh my gosh, it's probably like 40 pounds will come off when I'm in the hospital. And basically 11 pounds came off when I was in the hospital. And then I was like, oh no. And then I got pregnant again and gained more weight with the second child. And at that point, knew I was dead in the water as far as food went. And I was in total despair. I was in a horrible marriage at this point. I think I ended up separating in an abusive relationship when my second son was 12 weeks old. So I had two babies basically under two, and my marriage dissolving, was still sober, hugely overweight, you know, went home eating food to deal with all of those feelings, and really feeling pretty hopeless about my life. Somehow I kind of managed, I didn't go to OA at that point still, and managed to pull myself, or the program pulled me out of it, and just time and effort on my behalf of losing the weight, but then got remarried, had two more children. And by the time I had my fourth child, I knew that I was kind of done. You know, there was nothing that was going to stop me from eating, and I was just going to keep gaining, and there was not going to be any end in sight. And so I at that point is when I tried OA 90, which was kind of the only really strong OA I'd ever found. Somebody had come to an AA meeting and introduced me to the program. I managed to get abstinent and stay abstinent for a year. I lost all my weight, and it was a very strong program, a lot like how a lot of the same types of tools or stress on the tools. And but then I kind of thought, well, maybe I did just what they talk about in the literature. I said, well, maybe I'm making way too big a deal of this. You know, I never really tried moderate meals. I could probably do moderate meals. You know, why can't I have a sandwich? Or, you know, I just had all these, what, you know, how come I couldn't do it differently? You know, but the bottom line is I wanted to be able to eat and stay thin. And so I picked up food, and I just picked up a bite and thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to do it my way. But before I did that, I was already backing off on meetings, backing off on calls. That program that didn't have, even though the tools were obviously suggested, they weren't like a checklist that you did every day. I mean, you didn't like report on them, and they were kind of, it was strongly suggested, but depending on what your sponsor asked you to do, you might not have to call every day, or, you know, just things that I really found I needed to do and that Hal gave me. Those disciplines have, I believe, why I can stay abstinent. But so I went back out, and then immediately realized, you know, that was a real problem, because I was not going to be able to stop eating. As soon as I started eating, and I basically for 20 years begged God every day to get back to the program, it undermined my faith in my higher power that I'd gotten in AA, all of my program. You know, I started questioning whether there was a higher power. I'd go to bed at night and pray to God, get on my knees, please God, don't let me eat tonight. I was a night eater. And I'd wake up in the morning and, would have eaten most of the night. And, you know, I'd wake up. As soon as my stomach stopped hurting, I would start eating again. I'd, like, be writhing in pain on the couch from eating so much. And basically my key to eat again was when I stopped hurting. And then I ended up miraculously finding my way back to OA 90. And then kind of slipped again, and then found Hal and moved to Florida. And that was my back-to-back abstinence day, August 30th, 2017. My sponsor actually was familiar with both programs and had been sponsoring me in one program. And she said, I think you'll really like this program, and I think it'll work for you. And so anyway, I tried Hal, and, you know, that was the start of where I am today. And the things that work the best for me is, obviously, you don't just work, you do all the questions, you work the steps. Definitely went, you know, back through the big book and the literature, but the daily use of the tools, the disciplines, are really what keeps me, I think, on the straight and narrow. The service tool, which is one that I always kind of didn't feel comfortable with. It was kind of funny when I first hit the sponsor line, as soon as I did my step up, and they're like, oh, you can be on the sponsor line. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not ready. But even like everything else, that you're not doing it in a vacuum here. I've got a couple more really big pictures. I'm sorry, I'm not very good at this video sharing, I guess. But anyway, this is before I came in this last time. This is, I'm going on, if you can see, 300. Well, not quite 300 pounds, but that was the next stop that I did not want to get to. And then I have my Vermont license, which I always laugh, you know, honest program. I said that I am 230 pounds in this. However, I am not. I am like 270 pounds. So that was my total version of hell. You know, everything on me hurt. My ankles hurt. My knees hurt. My legs hurt. I felt so old. I looked old, felt old. My spirit was definitely old. So thank you. I'm looking at the time here. 5 minutes. Okay. 3 minutes. Okay. So, oh my gosh. Well, I want to get to the successful part here. So anyway, I am happy, joyous, and free. And OA How has done for me what I could not do for myself. It has given me the tools and the program to fill that God-sized hole with love and fellowship. Physically, I've recovered. I just love this program so much. This is me. My only dream was to ride my horse, and I was too chubby to ride my horse. And so a good friend in recovery gave me a horse, and I got to go to my first show and cleaned up on the ribbons. I got to move to Florida, which was a dream I was afraid to do. And that's me thin. And this is my daughter and I on the beach in Florida, which is pretty much heaven, smiling, happy, joyous, and free. And the HOW program is what really does it. You know, at first I loved the 2-hour. I said they should never tell an alcoholic that it's a 2-hour meeting, because I was like, this is ridiculous. Who would do a 2-hour meeting? This is like painful. And I'm like, who needs to hear the tools every week? You know, my gosh, they go on and on about the tools. But you know, who needed that? I need that. I absolutely need to hear it all the time, because I'm thick, you know, and I need to do it every day. And I think, you know, all the promises have come true in my life. You know, I don't regret the past. I don't fear the future. I love going to the doctors and hearing that everything's perfect. And I expect that, you know, I expect all my levels and blood pressure and all that to be perfect, and sugar. And, you know, I just can't say enough about this program. I'm sure as soon as I finish, there's going to be something I wish I'd said. But I do want to just thank everyone. Thank the fellowship, just the love and the whole disciplines of HOW, which allow me to have a wonderful life and to give back what I've been given and to participate in that daily. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. The floor is now open for 3-minute pitches or sharing. In HOW meetings, we share our experience, strength, and hope. No one is prohibited from sharing, but we ask that you focus on the solution. All pitches should be of a positive nature, in which you share your growth and recovery. All other issues can be worked out over the phone or after the meeting. Would someone care to pitch? We don't really have time, do we? We could maybe do one. You may turn on your camera and speak, raise your hand, send a chat, or unmute via your phone.
Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I just wanted to check in. It's June. I couldn't figure out how to get into the meeting, and I'm just really grateful for that share, and I'm glad I finally figured out how to get into the meeting. My phone number is Eastern Time, area code 424-224-0277. I am new. Thank you.
Welcome, June. I want to thank you for allowing me to be your leader for this meeting today. I also thank all those who participated, especially our speaker, Catherine, who offered so much of herself. May we please have the reading of Just for Today.
Hi, this is Kelly, compulsive overeater in California.
Hi, Kelly. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problem at once. I can do something for one day that would appall me if I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said. Most people are as happy as they make their minds up to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. I will try to, just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in 3 ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not get found out. If anyone knows of it, it will not count. I will do at least two things I do not want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt, though they may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and try not to improve or regulate anybody except myself. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all to myself and relax. During this half hour, sometime, I will try to get a better perspective of my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid, especially I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me. Pass.
Glad to see you're not on fire in California. For those joining us in person, I would like to ask for your help in putting away the equipment and bringing this room back to its original setup after we have concluded our closing prayer. Thanks for your help with this. We would also like to thank our skilled interpreters for helping us reach even more people who struggle with this disease. Closing statement. To those who are still new to the program, we remind you that all that was said here today should safely remain here as we respect and cherish our tradition of anonymity. We also assure you that following the program will get your weight off or on. Abstinence will remove the cravings. Our way of life will remove compulsion in time and give you contentment in all areas of your life. After a moment of meditation, will all those who wish to, please join in to say the Serenity Prayer. Those attending virtually, please unmute yourselves. Let's pray for those who are still suffering.
God,
grant me the serenity,
But I'll take a 3-month instead of a 1 year.
How did that get in there?
Jump up there, right? I guess jump forward.
I'm going to turn in my 2-month one also.
Oh, okay.
No reason to find
another. All right. So this is a 2-month.
And yeah, this is see, a these one say year. 1 year.